welcome to the Iowa Votes Rally, and there ain't no mountain high enough that we can't climb together. Iowans are voting right now. We have 16 days of voting left in this state, and that's why together we're going to make it happen, but we need your help. So I want to start by thanking Tessa Langling for that great introduction. You know, Tessa goes to Simpson College, and I was reminding Senator Warren that Simpson is the college that gave George Washington Carver an opportunity to get an education when he couldn't in his home state of Missouri. And I also want to thank our great interpreter, Bill Ainsley. He's doing a great job. I appreciate it, Bill. And how about the amazing band Host Country? The first time I heard them was at a wedding in Waterloo when they played for the wedding of my son David's good friends, Matt and Paige. David and Matt and Paige are here tonight. Thank you for being here. But we have a very special guest in the house. Senator Elizabeth Warren, and you're going to hear from her. Senator Warren knows, as I do, that America does best when we have a strong and growing middle class, and when a recovery on Wall Street that doesn't include a recovery on Main Street means that there isn't a real recovery in this country. And Senator Warren and I just came from Iowa City. We had a great event there earlier today. And I mentioned that I had lived there and studied there and worked there for 3 years. And to anyone who's ever gone to college, you'll probably appreciate it. Those 3 years that I spent in law school were the best of times and the worst of times. They were the best of times because I met some people while I was there who changed my life and made things possible for me. But it was the worst of times because in that first year, I lost my father and both of his parents in a 3-month period of time. And I learned about what happens to millions of Americans when life throws them a curveball. And I've been working before I went to law school every summer for the Poweshiek County Roads Department. I was out there building bridges in the middle of the countryside. And it was such tough, physically demanding work that by the end of 3 years, my work boots were completely torn up. And when I went to law school, I got rid of them. And then after my father died, and my mom was a young widow living in Brooklyn, Iowa, I decided I needed to go home that summer. And I didn't have a job, so I called up the county engineer and was kind enough to hire me back, but I had a problem. I didn't have any boots to wear. So I went out and I got a new pair of boots. And these are the boots that I wore that summer. And they're covered with oil and grease and paint and mud. And there's a reason why I still have these boots. These boots are a reminder to me that life is unpredictable and that working people get up every day and make our lives better without expecting anything in return except a chance at living the American dream. And these boots remind me that my top priority as your next senator is to make an economy that works for everyone, not just for the wealthy few. Those are the values I learned around the kitchen table growing up in Brooklyn, Iowa. I learned them from a father and mother who had grown up on farms in Iowa during the Great Depression. And when my dad was 17, he enlisted in the Marine Corps. And a year later, when he was 18, he landed on Iwo Jima the morning the flags were raised on Mount Suribachi. And he came home and he fell in love with a young school teacher who started teaching in 1948. And they got married and they had four children. And when I was 2 years old, my father was managing a grain elevator in Brooklyn and he fell nearly 30 feet and he shattered his right leg. And he was laid up for almost a year. And without the safety net of workers' compensation payments and friends and family who rallied to my family's support, we wouldn't have made it. And that's when I learned that you're only as strong as the people who you care about, and what we do together matters. So my dad had to change his careers and he started selling insurance, and my mom decided that she needed to get a 4-year teaching degree so she could go back into the classroom because she had a 2-year degree. And so she did. She drove 26,000 miles to get her 4-year degree. She started at Iowa State Teachers College. When she went back to school, it was called State College of Iowa, and she was in one of the very first graduating classes of the University of Northern Iowa. She graduated with her sister, who lived right next door to us, both of them second grade teachers.
All right. Yes.
Their mother died of cancer about a year before they both graduated. And I remember how proud my grandfather was, who farmed during the Depression, to see his two daughters get their 4-year college degree. I got my first job in third grade delivering the Des Moines Tribune, and I've been working ever since. I started doing farm work when I was in junior high. I was a janitor, a construction worker, a truck driver, a dishwasher, a bartender, a cook, a waiter. Each one of those jobs taught me something important, that if you do a job well, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it gives you dignity and a sense of purpose, and it gives your life meaning, and it helped me be able to go to college and law school. Between the day I graduated from high school and the day I graduated from law school, I worked 10 jobs. And when my father died, somebody did me the favor of offering me a job working in Iowa City. And it made all the difference in my life to figure out who I was and what I wanted to do with my life. And that's what being a member of the United States Senate should be about, is helping people. And that's why I'm running, because I have helped people the last 8 years in the first district of Iowa. Now I want to help people all over the state of Iowa. And I want to make sure that every Iowan, no matter where they live, no matter what their circumstances, has the same opportunity to live the American dream that I had growing up in Brooklyn, Iowa. Because that is what our responsibility is to each other, and that's what's wrong with Congress right now, is that there's too much partisan bickering, not enough people who are willing to be bridge builders and who want to spend their time burning down bridges that would help us solve the tough problems that we face. They seem more intent on protecting corporations and the wealthy. They don't need a senator, you do. So, when I talk about why we need to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, and give 300,000 Iowans a pay raise, 180,000 of those Iowans are women, Nearly half of them are over the age of 30, and 100,000 have children. Senator Ernst doesn't think we even need a federal minimum wage. She won't vote to raise the Iowa minimum wage. She has called the minimum wage a safety net, and she said that the federal minimum wage is ridiculous. You know what I think? What I think is ridiculous is that a hardworking Iowan working full-time at a minimum wage job is making $15,000 a year, and if they have children, they're living in poverty. That is not a safety net. And if you help elect me to the United States Senate, I will work with Senator Warren to make sure that companies that ship jobs overseas lose their tax breaks, and we reward companies that keep jobs here in America. And I think when you talk about protecting retirement security, that we owe a solemn responsibility to those who are currently using Social Security and Medicare, but we also owe a solemn responsibility to people who have been paying into that their whole lives and want it to be there when they get to be retirement age as well. And that's why my plan to strengthen and preserve Social Security says that if you're a millionaire or a billionaire, you should be paying the same share of your earned income into Social Security as hardworking Iowans. And unlike Joni Ernst, I will never, ever vote to privatize your Social Security. Because that's not a retirement plan for Iowans, that's a retirement plan for Wall Street investment bankers. So to me, the focus of what our economy in Iowa has always been built upon, and one of the reasons I'm so excited to hear from Senator Warren, is in Iowa, everything always starts with education. And I didn't have to go far to learn about the value of education. A lot of you know the story about my mom. I called her when I was coming to Iowa with the president to Cedar Rapids. I wanted to see if she would be able to come join us and hear the President of the United States speak. And she said, "Well, that sounds like fun, but I can't." I said, "Mom," this is 2 years ago, "you're 83 years old. What could you possibly be doing that day more important than hearing from the president?" And she said, "Well, I'm a long-term sub in a third grade class and I can't get out." So I said, "I'm gonna tell the president you thought that was more important than listening to him," and I did, and he said, "Sounds to me like your mom made the right choice." Now, did any of you happen to see a debate in Sioux City on Thursday? I got to Morningside College and I walked into the room where we were supposed to wait before we went on stage, and my jaw dropped because my wife Carolyn was there. And the reason why my jaw dropped is because Carolyn taught all day in Waterloo, Steve. I saw Steve earlier. Steve. And I didn't think she was going to make the 4-hour trip to Sioux City and be there in time for the debate, and she did, because it was important to me. And then she made a 4-hour trip back to Waterloo that same night to be in her classroom at 7:30 the next morning. That's dedication. So, since Carolyn and I both worked year-round to pay our way through college and graduate school, education has always been important to us, and college affordability has been one of my top priorities. That's why, when I went to Congress, I voted to expand access to Pell Grants. I voted to cut the interest rate on federal loans in half. I've introduced tax cuts for students and parents for tuition and college expenses that are already expiring. And I agree with Senator Warren that if you can refinance a loan on your car or a house, when you get out of college, you should be able to refinance your student loan. Now, these things seem pretty basic to me, having grown up in Iowa and benefited from a great education system. But Senator Ernst has said repeatedly that she wants to abolish the Department of Education, which oversees these programs. That means 110,000 Iowa college students getting Pell Grants.
It's
gone.
230,000 Iowans getting federal student loans. She says the federal government should get out of the student loan business. What does that mean practically, Senator? Well, here's what it means. If you're getting one of those loans at 4.5% right now, and you don't have that option anymore, you're going to be out in the private marketplace where the rates are as high as 12 to 16%. Or 21. So we heard earlier from Tessa, if you're a student at Simpson, where the average student loan debt is $35,000, that means you'll be paying $20,000 more in interest alone over the life of your loan. How is that good for Iowa? It's not, absolutely. So one of the things that is so important is that there's a difference between coming up with sound bites and coming up with solutions. Privatizing student loans is as bad of an idea as privatizing Social Security. So about a year ago, Joni Ernst was at a private breakfast where she admitted something important. She admitted that her policies, and these are her words in a direct quote, are going to be very painful, and we know it. I don't know about you, but inflicting pain doesn't sound like putting Iowans first, and it sure doesn't sound like putting you first. So why doesn't Senator Ernst want to inflict a little pain on the secret donors who are helping the Koch brothers and their billionaire friends attack me in this Senate race? Yeah. Because in the debates, it's very clear who wants to put reasonable limitations so that the voices of Iowans is just as strong as the voices of secret donors who right now get greater influence and greater protection than you do. And I think that's wrong. They think that their secret money matters more than your votes. I say they're wrong, and we have 16 days to prove that they're wrong. So, I need your help. Every Democrat on the ballot this year needs your help. You've been doing a phenomenal job knocking on doors, making phone calls, collecting absentee ballots. We have to go full bore between now and 9 o'clock on November 4th, because that's how Democrats win. I need your help. We're going to do this, but we're going to do it together. So let me just say this about Elizabeth Warren. She is a shining star because she knows that the way you make a difference is by speaking truth to power. And she knows that an economy that works is an economy that works for all Americans, and she's not afraid to tell people that. But one of the first things that I learned about her is that she started her career as an elementary school teacher. So, Senator, we're here to listen. We're here to learn. Come teach us.
All right. with Bruce Braley. I'm glad to be here with Bruce Braley because he is a man who will fight for our values. Way to go, Bruce. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about America and about America's story. About a story about how we build opportunity, how we build a future in this country. And like so many of us, my story starts just personally. I was the late in life baby. My mother always called me the surprise. I have three much older brothers, and I learned a lot from my brothers. Learned it growing up, and I still learn from my brothers. All three of my brothers served in the military. My oldest brother, Don Reed, was career military, 288 combat missions in Vietnam. And I learned what it means to honor those in service. That's what I learned from my brother. My second brother, John, after he got out of the military, he worked construction all his life, and boy, that's a job where there are some good years and some years not so good. But I'll tell you one thing. He had many years where he was a crane operator and a member of a union, and that's why he has a pension today. That's what I mean. David, the youngest of the three, my brother David, after he got out of the military, he started his own small business. He was the one who had the special spark out there. You really should meet him someday. When that business didn't work out, he started another business. David was one of those guys who just couldn't imagine a world where he wasn't out there living by his wits every single day. And what David has today is his Social Security. And it reminds me why we protect Social Security for all of us. Now, while I was growing up, like a lot of families, we had a lot of ups and downs. And when I was about 12, all three boys were off in the military. My daddy was, at the time, he was selling carpeting. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She was 50. And he had a heart attack, a massive heart attack. And a lot of people know what that means. Long period in the hospital, no money coming in, the bills pile up, we lost the family station wagon. And we were right on the edge. We're going to lose our home. And I remember the day that I walked into my folks' bedroom, and my mother had her best dress out. And I was trying to figure what this meant. I was 12. She was crying, talking to herself, we will not lose this house. And finally, she wiped her face, she pulled on that dress, put on her lipstick, stepped into her high heels, and she walked to the Sears Roebuck, where she got a minimum wage job in an America where a minimum wage job would support a family of three. And that's how we survived. God bless that America. Now, there was no money for college, but I got a scholarship. Got a debate scholarship. And you know those Midwestern debaters. And headed off and gave it up when I was 19 to get married. God, I was smart at 19. Whoa. But you know, I got a second chance. I wanted to be a teacher. I'd always wanted to be a teacher. And to be a teacher, you gotta go to college. I was gonna be the first in my family if I could make it. My second chance was a commuter college that cost $50 a semester because I grew up in an America that was investing in education for all of our kids. And that's it. I tell this story out of deep gratitude. I am the daughter of a janitor who ended up in the United States Senate because I grew up in an America that was building a future for all of its children. Now, I just want to talk for a minute about how that came to be. It's something we have to stop and pause on. Coming out of the Great Depression, America made some really powerful decisions. The first one was one that said, you know, we shouldn't keep getting dragged down by the banks. That's not working for us as an economy, right? And so, as a country, we said we're going to put some tough rules in place. Nobody steals your purse on Main Street or your pension on Wall Street. So we built an SEC, we built Glass-Steagall. We also decided, boy, this one's gonna shock you, banking should be boring. No excitement there. When you put money in the bank, that's the part you're supposed to be able to depend on, not crazy risk-taking. So we said a level playing field, a little transparency, a chance that you can go into these markets and not be tricked, not be cheated, not be fooled. That's what it was about. That's right. That's exactly right. We got that right. And then we did a second thing. And this is remarkable. We said we're going to invest in building a future together. And what was our first investment, our biggest investment? It was in education. We doubled down on our public schools, on our universities. We made it happen. A grateful nation said to returning GIs after World War II, we're going to help you get an education. Because if you get better educated, we're all going to do better from that. That's how it's going to work. And when we worried that we were falling behind as a country in science and math in the 1950s, we passed laws to say we're going to offer student loans to our kids, but here's the deal. The taxpayers, the people, you and me, the government, we're going to pitch in some money and subsidize those loans, help those kids get a college education. That's what we're doing. We believed in what we could do. We believed that education helps us all. And then we made another set of investments. Same time, we started investing in infrastructure. Yeah, roads and bridges and dams, right? Interstate highway system.
Airports,
exactly right. Anybody else have one? That's right. We invested in infrastructure, but we had an idea behind it. Why did we do that? Because we believed in business, in small businesses growing into something, in big businesses getting bigger. We believed that the next person who came along with a great idea, we didn't know what it was going to be. We didn't know what they were going to need, but we were pretty sure there was one thing they were going to need. They were going to need to plug in and get electricity. They were going to need water, right? They were going to need roads and bridges to get their goods to market. They were going to need educated workers to be able to come in and work for them. So what we did as a country, all of us, is we invested just a little in creating the basic infrastructure so business could grow in this country and produce great jobs for all of us. That's what we did. We made those investments. And we did one more. We did one more. We invested in research, in medical research, in scientific research, in engineering research, in chemical research. Think about it. This was extraordinary. No country on earth had done this. We invested over and over and over in research. And why did we do it? Because we believed that if we built a giant pipeline of ideas, that our children would have opportunities that we couldn't even dream of. We believed in it, in the future. We did it, and here's the amazing thing. It worked. It absolutely, positively worked. It worked. I can do the geek version of how this worked. Watch median income go up year after year and match it to how GDP goes up year after year. Or to say it another way, as our country got richer, our families got richer. And as our families got richer, our country got richer. That's how America built a future. That's how America built the middle class. Oh, we did it. We did it, and then starting back in the 1980s, the Republicans had a different idea. And they wanted to pull this country in a different direction. First step was fire the police, fire the cops. Not the cops on Main Street, fire the cops on Wall Street. They called it deregulation, but what it really meant was have at 'em, boys. They were saying, in effect, to the biggest financial institutions, any way you can trick or trap or fool anybody into signing anything, man, you can just rake in the profits. And we watched what happened as a consequence of that. But the second thing that happened, right along about the same time, is that we started cutting back on all those investments. The Republicans said, oh no, the economic theory that we believe in is trickle down. That's exactly right. A plumbing theory. Yeah, trickle down. Because they said we're going to cut taxes for those at the top, and then the way we're going to pay for it is to cut the investments. You guys ready for this? In education, infrastructure, and basic research. And by golly, that is exactly what they did. So we could pick any part of this. I'll hit three of them real quick. On education, we now live in a world where the kids whose parents can't afford to write a check for college, Lord knows, people need those college diplomas. They need that for a chance to be able to get in the middle class. Today what happens is that the federal government is in the position of charging those students not only the money they'll lend out, plus the administrative fees, plus enough money to cover the bad debt losses, plus the cost of the funds, but a huge premium on top of that to produce extra revenues from the government on the backs of kids who are trying to get an education. That is wrong. It is wrong. They have put a tax, an extra tax, on the back of anyone who's trying to get an education and doesn't come from a rich enough family to pay up front for it. That is not how we build a future. And infrastructure. Oh, so talk to the American Society of Civil Engineers. You know what they'll tell us? We now have 30 years of underinvesting in infrastructure. The price tag on what we've underinvested, $3.4 trillion just to bring us up to speed. But understand it this way, because this is the scary number. Other countries around the world have begun to figure out this model. So right now, China is investing 9% of its GDP on infrastructure. It is building a future for its businesses. Here in the United States, we're stuck at 2.4%. 4% and looking for ways to cut that. We will not build a future without investing in infrastructure. And basic research, let me just put it this way. To all you college kids out there, from my generation to yours, adjusted for inflation, the United States, as a proportion of GDP, is spending half of what it spent in basic research, what it was spending a generation ago. We are shrinking the pipeline of ideas and choking off your future. So, one more piece on this. That's the Republicans generally. If you think that they're planning to back up, to moderate, they say we've cut enough, we've already done it, I'll just say two things to you. Mitch McConnell says that if you'll put the Republicans in control of the United States Senate, and remember, that is the question on the table in Iowa, if you put the Republicans in charge, one of the first things he wants to do is cut the regulations on Wall Street. Turn them loose again, right? Because it worked out so well the last time. And if you want to watch where they're planning to go on how to spend money, just take a look at the Ryan budget. Cut taxes for those at the top, and how do they plan to pay for it? By making the cuts in education, infrastructure, and basic research. And let me just add, I think Joni Ernst says that she's all behind the Ryan budget.
Didn't go far enough.
Love that. Didn't go far enough. All right. So look, the Republicans have made clear their basic vision of how to build a country, how to build a future. Their vision is that government should work for those at the top, for those who have money, for those who have power, for those who can hire armies of lobbyists and lawyers. Our vision, Bruce Braley's vision, my vision, is that we make government work for the people. That's what this election is about. That's what it's about. A t-shirt. That's my view. And it really should. The t-shirt should say, I got mine, the rest of you are on your own. That's right. Well, I tell you, they can get out there and they can say it. They can rake in a lot of money from a handful of rich people to try to get out and tell the story their way. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to us. It's going to come down to the people in this room. We can hang back, we can whine about what the Republicans have done, we can whimper about what they've done, or we can fight back. Me, I'm fighting back. Fights forward. And that's what we do when we get together. We know what the Republicans are up to. We get the picture, right? It's there. You got to be honest here. They did not try to hide it. They've been pretty straightforward about it, right? They've just tried to tell you something different about what it's going to mean. So, I think when we get together, we have to remind ourselves not just what we're fighting against, but what we're fighting for.
That's right.
We're fighting for a level playing field, and that means more rules on Wall Street, and we're willing to fight for it. That instead of tax breaks to ship jobs overseas, we should take that money and invest it at home in infrastructure and research and build a future here for our kids, and we're willing to fight for it. You bet. We believe that no one should work full time and still live in poverty, and that means raising the minimum wage, and we will fight for it. We will fight for it. And we believe that after a lifetime of hard work, that everyone in this country is entitled to retire with dignity and security. That means protecting Social Security and Medicare. And we will fight for it. Yes, yes. You bet. We believe that every kid in this country is entitled to try to get an education without being crushed by student loan debt. I can't believe we have to be talking about this one in 2014. We believe in equal pay for equal work. Yes. And we believe that women are entitled to make their own health care decisions. I could go on like this for a long time. But I gotta do just one more. And that is to remind every one of us, you're looking for the big difference between us and the other guys. We believe that corporations are not people, and we are money and Citizens United. This country works for people. That's what we'll do. Why we're here. So I gotta tell you, we know what they stand for. We know what we stand for. What puzzles me is how Joni Ernst thinks she's gonna win. So I'm serious about this. I mean, abolish the Department of Education? You gotta be kidding me. Just tell a bunch of kids here in Iowa, you're gonna lose your Pell Grants, you're gonna lose your student loans. I'm struggling on this. At least I was struggling until I heard about her little strategy meeting in California with the Koch brothers, where she ever so politely thanked the Koch brothers for being responsible for her rise in the Republican Party, and where she seemed to make it clear that she thinks that the Koch brothers and their billionaire friends are gonna come in here to Iowa and buy this election. Well, I got a feeling here that Joni Ernst is wrong. The people who are gonna determine this election are right here in this room. How this looks to everybody outside Iowa. Iowa has led this country time after time after time. You have put it on. You've raised the issues. You've put them out there. You've made it clear to the rest of America what's happening. What's happening to our country, where our values are, how we build a future. And now, the rest of the country turns to you one more time. Because the issue in this race in 2014, right here for the United States Senate, is a question of who does this government work for? Does it work just for the millionaires, just for the billionaires, just for those who have armies of lobbyists and lawyers? Or does it work for the people? That's the question in this race. People, that's who it works for. So this is it. You know, I just came from Minnesota. I was with Al Franken. I want to work. You bet. Al is terrific. Al is terrific. But I want to remind all of you about something. Al won his race by 312 votes. Think about that. Yeah, the recount that went on forever until they got it right. But he won by 312 votes. That's what democracy ultimately comes down to. As he points out, at a rally like that, we got more than 312 people in this room. In fact, we got twice as many as 312 people in this room. This race is hard fought. This race will be close. And what this race could come down to is how many doors you knocked on, how many phone calls you made, how many times you stood in parking lots and handed out flyers and talked to people, how many times you spoke to the person next to you in the grocery store about what is at stake in this race. Face to face, eye to eye, talking to people about the differences. The differences are not hard to see. We just got to be willing on our side to stand up and talk about what we believe in. That's what this election is about. That's what it's about. So Bruce Braley is doing everything he can. He's out there from early morning till late at night, and he's going to keep doing everything he can until the polls close on November 4th. He's out there to work for us. The question is, are we ready to get out there and work for him? Yeah.